the greater discourse on ways of undertaking things. And this particular one has two Chinese parallels, one of them in the Chinese Majjhima Agama, number 175, and the other is an individual translation. And the individual translation was made by a fellow called Dharma Raksha, presumably an Indian monk, between 265 and 316 AD. And the has the title Proper Dhammas. That translation being around 300 AD is about a century before the actual Agama, full Agama translation. So as we find commonly with these, that the individual translations were made here and there by different monks would come over and do different translations of one or two suttas or a group of suttas or something. But then later when the full Agamas were translated, it seems like most of that activity stopped. It's around between 400 and 420 AD that the Agamas were translated. And both of the Chinese versions are located in the Kuru country rather than in Savatthi. Well, no, not the good old redaction thing. The Savatthi normalization redaction principle. Okay. For the most part, beings have this wish, desire and longing. If only unwished for, undesired, disagreeable things would diminish and wished for, desired and agreeable things would increase. Yet, although beings have this wish, desire and longing, unwished for, undesired and disagreeable things increase for them and wished for, desired and agreeable things diminished. Now, because what do you think is the reason for this? Okay, so just to note some of the verbal forms, Savatthiyaṃ in Savatthi, locative, viharati, the Buddha dwells, literally, in Savatthi. Okay, and then he addressed the bhikkhus. So this is the aorist here in its past tense sense. So it's a little bit, this is kind of like the historical present thing, it's not entirely consistent. He said to the bhikkhus, and the bhikkhus replied, again, this is the aorist tense, in the past tense, and again, ayatala vocha is again aorist. So you can see, so avocha here being the form. So all of these are aorists, so you can see that there's actually little or anything in common between the forms. Avocha, amantesi, is the ending here, is esi, aorist, here's avocha, pachasosum. So this is not an easy form to master. Okay, for the most part, yebhu yena, so this is the Pali idiom when you say the majority, or for the most part, and then they have this desire and wish, aho vata, anitta, so aho means?
Aho.
Means aho, okay. Vata means, oh, like that. Okay, so aho vata means oh, aho. Okay, it's a kind of
a bit of a whinge or a moan.
Yeah, a bit of a whinge or a moan or something. Yeah, anicca vata sankhara. Alas, sometimes you translate it as alas. All sankharas are impermanent. Aho vata. So this is the word that Mahadeva alleged he could get enlightened by crying out, aho dukkhang, aho dukkhang. Oh, suffering, Aho vata. So these are two more indeclinables. They talked a bit about the indeclinables recently. So they always appear in the same form wherever they are. Okay. And again here the optative form. May it be the case that those undesirable dhammas should disappear and those desirable dhammas should increase. Okay. So what's the reason for this? Now the bhikkhu is obviously trying to get out of answering anything here because it was probably one of these cases, it was probably like after the Buddha had been having a chat with Sati the fisherman's son or something like that and he got some answer from him and said, you foolish man, how can you say such a silly thing? And then he sat there glum and shoulders drooping, unable to say anything, and then after that the monk said, right, I'm not going to answer. You can answer if you like. If only Eva had been there, she would have given an answer. Bhagavan Mulaka. Our dhammas are rooted, mula, in the Blessed One. Bhagavan Netika. Bhagavan, the Blessed One, is the they are led to guided by the Blessed One. The Blessed One is the guide of the Netika, and they have the Blessed One as their resort. Sadhu Vata. So here Vata again, having a meaning of like, here's not having a meaning of depression so much as here, but more, it's more emotive, you know. It would be really good if the Blessed One, Bhagavanteva Patibhatu Etas Bhasitas Ato Bhagavato, and then we will bear it in mind. Having heard, the bhikkhus will bear it in mind. So here we have a future tense. And we obviously haven't found a huge amount of future tenses as we've been going along, but here one is. And usually, you can tell the future tenses by the double S. Okay, so the most common future tense forms of the verbs have this dharesanti. Okay?
Those two particles are totally different.
Yeah, different implications. It's just an emotive particle. So it sort of gives more of an emotive feel to whatever sentence it's in. So it takes on the colouring of what's around it. So here, because it's with aho, then that gives it that aho kind of feeling. Yeah? But here it has a more. And here we also have another future tense. Then because listen, pay attention, I will speak. So notice the similarity between this form of the future tense and this form is dharesanti bhasisami. Okay, this is a plural form. The bhikkhus will bear it in mind. And here it is, I will speak. So, bhasami. So the present tense form of that would be something like bhasami. And then the is stuck in the middle there and turns it into a future tense. Okay, so this is generally how you tell future tenses look like present tenses, but with a couple of S's bunged in the middle. Okay, Sujata's grammar lesson 101. Right. Evang bhanteti koti bhikkhu. And then those bhikkhus replied to the Blessed One. The Blessed One said this. Here, bhikkhus, an unlearned Patujana, who doesn't see the Aryans and not skilled in the Aryan Dhamma and so on, a phrase we've met many times before, does not know what things should be cultivated and what things should not be cultivated. So the word to cultivate here is sevitabbe. Sevitabbe dhamme. So this is sevana, the same as the first line of the Mangala Sutta. Asevana cha balanang, panditanang cha sevanang. Okay? So associating or cultivating. Okay? Bhajitabbe. Okay? Does not know what things should be followed and what things should not be followed. Not knowing this, he cultivates that which should not be cultivated and does not cultivate things that should be cultivated. He follows things that should not be followed and does not follow things that should be followed. Okay? So, these all being the present tense verbs. Dhamme sevati, sevitabbe. This is a future passive participle, meaning to be followed in the future. Present tense sevati, bhajati. Bhajati is all present tense. Okay? And because he does this, that unwished for, undesired, disagreeable things increase for him and wished for, desired, agreeable things diminish. Why is that? That is what happens to one who does not see. Okay? This is what happens. Avidasana. One who is ignorant. And of course, for the well-taught noble disciple, of course, is exactly the opposite. They cultivate what they should cultivate and don't cultivate what they should not cultivate. Okay? And then comes up to the four kinds of dhamma samadhanas, ways of undertaking things. Okay, so painful now and painful in the future. Okay, so a different sequence to the previous sutta. Starts out with the entirely negative one. Then pleasant now and painful in the future. Painful now and pleasant in the future. And pleasant now and pleasant in the future. So this sequence seems to be more convincing than the previous one in the previous sutta. Okay, so one is ignorant, not knowing this way of undertaking things. It is painful now and ripens in the future as pain, does not understand it as it actually is thus. This way of undertaking things is painful now and ripens in the future as pain, not knowing it, not understanding it as it actually is. The ignorant one cultivates it and does not avoid it. because he does so unwished for, undesired, disagreeable things increase for him, and wished for, desired, agreeable things diminish. Why is that? That's what happens to one who does not see. Okay, and similarly, one who's ignorant doesn't know the way of undertaking things that's pleasant now and ripens in the future as pain, and then undertakes that. One who's ignorant, not knowing the way that's painful now and ripening the future as pleasure, then undertakes that. And one who's ignorant, not knowing the way of understanding things that are undertaking things that are pleasant now and ripen in the future of pleasure, then also does not understand that. And so on, and so the reverse for the wise person, of course. So I'm not going to go through all of the permutations. It gets a little bit, it's a little bit pedantic. But you can, I'm sure you'll be able to work it out. You could, yeah. A little bit. Okay, so now the four ways. Where are we going? Patribhanna, ayating,
yami dhan. We're up to paragraph 14, is that
right? Yep, paragraph 14, the four ways. Okay. Now, this is a bit more interesting. Here, bhikkhus, someone in pain and grief kills living beings. Right?
Yeah, that's a weird sentence, isn't it?
Someone with pain and grief kills living beings. And he experiences pain and grief out of killing living beings as condition. In pain and grief, he takes what is not given, misconducts himself in sensual pleasures, speaks falsehood, speaks maliciously, speaks falsely, gossips, is covetous, has a mind of ill will, and has wrong view. So, of course, these being the dasa kusala kamma patha, 10 pathways of wholesome action, which we've met previously. Now, after dissolution of the body, he reappears in hell. So this is a more general way of formulating it than we found in the previous sutta. Okay, what about pleasant now and painful in the future? Here, because someone in pleasure and joy, okay, pachupanna sukha, ayating dukkhavi pakang. Here, someone in pleasure and joy kills living beings and takes what is not given and all the rest of it. Then after he dies, he goes to hell. Is that possible?
Well, in the first place, being in pain and everything and going around killing, that seems a little bit impossible.
Being in pain and going around killing, why is that impossible?
Well, you think about the things you wouldn't. You don't have to get better, to get rid of your pain, but you wouldn't go around killing.
Go live in Burma.
And that's why a lot of serial killers actually do it, because you're in pain.
Poor people who are peasants and serfs are usually in pain. They don't have healthcare plans and a nice hotel to rest up for the night. They struggle with life, and then they go and kill a pig that they find in the bush somewhere so they can eat.
Mm.
And then the opposite is the other one, Brahmins, who are rich and wealthy and have all the opportunities, and they're very happy drinking their wine and eating their grapes, and so forth.
And clearly.
Yeah, why not? Or sacrificial ox or whatever.
What about going hunting? What about all the oiks in England going around, and they go around and... and they go around and they... Oh, no, the oiks is the other way around, isn't it? The oiks is what they call the plebs, isn't it? Anyway. And they go around and they have fun killing, don't they? And people kill, go fishing.
Go foxing.
So fishing is the most popular sport in Australia and also the most dangerous. Yeah? Fishing is actually the most dangerous sport in Australia. Is that instant karma?
Is it dangerous? Why is it dangerous?
Because people like stand on the end of rocks and in Sydney Harbour on slippery rocks and so on, and the waves come and they get washed out to sea, and they're usually drunk at the time. There's one time a few years ago, it happened in somewhere in near the Gap in Sydney, and they climbed down these cliffs, and there's this kind of little goat track down the cliffs, and they climbed down there with their big carton of beer or something like that, and then they went to this place where they were going to go fishing, you know, getting drunk and going fishing, and they couldn't climb back up again because the tide shifted or something like that. And then they had to get all this huge rescue operation to come and get them out, right? And it cost a huge amount of money to rescue these idiots. And then the next week they did exactly the same thing and had to get rescued again. You know, this really happened. And like, the rescue services guys were like, you know, what are we doing this for? You know, just stay there. Psychologists believe the supermarket worker's 5-year orgy of murder might have been prompted by the death of his grandfather. Alexander The animal lover who killed humans to let them into another world. Well, a lot of us have grandfathers who died. Alexander Pichuskin, the so-called chessboard killer. He played chess under the trees and invited his opponents for a drink afterwards. He lured his victims, mostly elderly men, to a quiet part of the park before attacking them from behind with a hammer. He would suggest drinking a glass of vodka next to the grave of his beloved dog before killing them.
Why are we finding out this?
You'll find that in a minute. He dreamed of surpassing Chikatilo, Russia's most notorious serial killer. He was a pleasant young man, always polite, and someone who loved animals. She found him in tears once in the stairwell of the block of flats they shared, speechless with grief over the death of his cat. Began his career when he was 18, killing the boyfriend of a neighbour he'd fallen in love with. Later he killed the girl. But the interesting bit, blah, blah. He could be particularly cruel. The body of one woman was found with tiny stakes hammered into her skull and around her eyes. And he said, "For me, life without killing is life without food for you. I felt like the father of all these people, since it was I who opened the door for them to another world."
Well, he was a total psychotic.
Well, they declared that he's not mentally ill and was fit to stand trial. Whatever that could, whatever possibly it could mean to say you're not mentally ill and do all those things. What possible a definition of mental illness you can have?
It's like people who are in a lot of pain and suffering, they use razor blades and they cut themselves.
Yeah, create more pain.
Didn't rational people go off and have a holy crusade? So people justify lots of things with religion. Or philosophical ideals.
Yeah.
Go off and, you know, commit atrocities and it's okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Or what about forced labour? In an abattoir, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Killing in pain.
It's painful, painful now and painful later, yeah. This particular one, the pleasant now and painful later, seems to contradict the Abhidhamma, or rather the Abhidhamma seems to contradict this, because the Abhidhamma says that it's impossible to... kusala... Hang on. Akusala citta is never associated with happiness. Wholesome mind states are always associated with happiness or neutral feeling, and unwholesome mind states are always associated with painful feeling. So, I mean, it's kind of quite nice that there's this kind of correlation between what's wholesome and good and what's happiness, but it certainly doesn't seem to agree with this, either with experience or with this particular passage, because we've all done bad things and rather enjoyed it, and may only be much later that you maybe realize it wasn't a particularly skillful way of behaving. Right. Okay, and the next way is painful now and pleasant in the future. So someone who in pain and grief abstains from killing living beings and so on and so forth, and then afterwards they go to heaven. So this is someone who maybe has to have a bit of, I think this is like a bit of kind of moral courage that you have to stick up for what is right, even though it's not convenient, yeah? And it may be very difficult. So in certain circumstances, maybe, you might not have food or something like that. You have to go without food and, you know, you could go out hunting to get some food, but you prefer to do without.
Tiananmen Square. Standing in front of a tank with your shopping bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really convenient.
No, it's certainly not convenient, yeah.
This can be conducive to your suffering later on.
Yeah.
And not well-being.
Yeah.
But probably leads to a good rebirth, because you're holding up to good moralistic
values. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's kind of... Of course, it's always easy to do good when you don't have a challenge, isn't it? You know, when there's no problem, then it's easy to be good.
Like, it's easy for rich people to be vegetarians.
Yeah.
Poor people to try and get vegetarians.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Because you can, when you're rich, you can also afford to get people to go and get the food for you.
Yeah, yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
Go and resource it. Go and find me this B12 complex protein in some obscure legume from Brazil.
Mm. But vegetarian is not a modern day thing. We have to really understand that it's a big part of Jainism, which is much older than Buddhism. So I don't know if they're worrying about B12 and complex proteins and combining them.
I think people make themselves sick by worrying about those things. No, I used to worry about them before. But that's
even in the case of the Jains, then it's an expectation we only eat this type of food supplied to us.
No, it's the lay people as well. Lay Jains.
But is that right? Is it right that that it's easy to do good if there's no challenge?
No, it's from your lesson of as you get walk past and you see something needs doing, you do it. There's no challenge, you just do it. And it's a good thing.
It's a challenge on your time.
It's harder to do good. Yeah,
yeah,
I remember there's this
if you're in business, you kind of business is going well and you're making a lot of money, then it's relatively easy to be honest. But as soon as the crunch starts to come, then the temptation comes. Not that everybody does. I mean, people are still dishonest even when they're making money. But it's relatively easy to keep doing that, and it's when the pressure comes.
That's the piece of integrity. If you stand to McDonald's
on
a deal,
what do you mean?
Yeah.
If McDonald's was to hire 30-year-olds instead of 12-year-olds behind the counter, they would lose millions of dollars in wages.
Yeah.
And you would see the test of their ethical approach to their business.
Yeah.
I'm sure you won't find McDonald's will be hiring anybody older than the age of 15 for that very reason. And going gets tough. McDonald's keeps making money.
Okay. And pleasant now and pleasant later. In pleasure and joy abstains from killing living beings and so on, and afterwards goes to heaven. So, now some similes. So these similes are found in the other versions, but the difference is that in the other versions, the similes followed the respective previous passages. So he talks about the one who's painful in the future, painful now and pleasant in the future, and then you have the simile for that, and so you have similes interspersed, whereas in the Pali they're all gathered together here at the end. Because suppose there was a bitter gourd mixed with poison, and a man came who wanted to live, not to die, who wanted pleasure and recoiled from pain, and they told him, good man, this bitter gourd is mixed with poison, drink from it if you want, and as you drink from it, its colour, smell, and taste will not agree with it, and after drinking from it, you will come to death or deadly suffering. All right? But you can still have it if you want. So then he had from it. He drank from it. So piveya is the opposite case again. Colour, smell, taste did not agree with him, and after drinking from it, he came to death or deadly suffering. This is the way of undertaking things that is painful now and ripens in the future as pain. Sorry?
Piveya, what does that mean?
Piveya is to drink, yeah. The root is like pivoti or something. Pivot. These are all different forms of it. If you want to drink, pivato, pivitwa, piveya, they're all different forms of the verb to drink.
It's like drinks, isn't it? You know that it's not good for you, you drink anyway.
No, but then that's pleasant now.
Well, not all drinks.
Oh, yeah? Like what one's that?
Then how would you take, I guess?
Usually, one has a perception that they're painful now. I think in giving this example, my feeling is that the Buddha is trying to, because he compared this to the previously to the kind of Jain ascetic practices thing, and he's really presenting this as being pretty stupid, and really trying to hammer home this idea that this whole kind of ascetic practices idea is really a bit dummy, a bit just for ningnongs, really.
Although that particular practice, or ascetic practices in general.
Yeah, ascetic practices in general.
And he said it was painful point.
Yeah.
Sure, he got to the point where he recognized that there was.
Yeah. Suppose there was a bronze cup of beverage possessing good colour, smell and taste. So it's varna sampanno, gandha sampanno, rasa sampanno. Varna, colour, gandha, fragrance or smell? Rasa, taste. But it was mixed with poison. Visena. Okay, so visa is the poison. Sangsatto. And a man came who wanted to live and not to die. Wanted pleasure and recoiled from pain. And they told him, good man, this bronze cup. So who is they? Anyway, this is a mysterious they. Well, they said it was all right. Yeah, I don't believe them. This bronze cup of beverage possesses a good colour, smell and taste, but it's mixed with poison. Drink from it if you want. If you drink from it, its colour, smell and taste will agree with you, but after drinking from it, you will come to death or deadly suffering. Then he drank from it, okay, without reflecting. Appatisankhaya, okay, not reflecting. Piveya, he would drink. Again, the optative case here. Napatinisajaya, did not reject it. Again, the optative. And as he drank from it, its colour, smell and taste agreed with him, but after drinking from it, he came to death or deadly suffering. Okay, this is a way of undertaking things that's pleasant now and ripens in the future as pain. Okay, now, next one. Suppose there was a fermented urine mixed with various medicines. Putimutang, nanabesajehi, sangsatang. And a man came sick with jaundice. Pandu ka rogo. And they came along and they said to him, good man, this fermented urine is mixed with various medicines. Drink from it. As you drink from it, the colour, smell and taste will not agree with you, curiously enough. But after drinking from it, you'll be well. And he drank from it, and after reflecting, so patisankhaya, after reflecting, he would drink. Optative case, again, optatives here all the way through, nachadeya, optative. And after drinking from it, he became well. That's the way of undertaking things. It's painful now and ripens in the future as pleasant. So again, although these examples quite, maybe a bit, you feel like he's kind of belaboring the point, but it's kind of emphasizing this idea of the Buddha as the great doctor and the Dhamma as the medicine. So suppose there were curd, honey, ghee and molasses mixed together. Sounds delicious. Curd, dadhi, madhu, honey, sappi, ghee. Okay. So even in India today, ghee is known either as ghee or as sarpi. There are two words used for it. Japanitang and molasses or unrefined sugar. All mixed together. No, namanitang. All mixed together. Sounds delicious. Right. And a man came along who had dysentery. Dysentery? Lohita pakkhandiko. Blood something, yeah. Pakkha is usually a side. I'm not sure. Maybe dysentery. Anyway. And good man. Here's this curd, honey, ghee, and molasses. Drink from it. As you drink from it, its colour, to smell, and taste will agree with you, and after drinking from it, you will be well. So, as he drank from it, after reflecting and did not relinquish it. Okay. After drinking, he became well. So this is a way that's pleasant now and ripens in the future as pleasure. And just as in the autumn, in the last month of the rainy season, when the sky is clear and cloudless, the sun rises above the earth, dispelling all darkness from space with its shining and beaming and radiance. So too, the way of undertaking things that is pleasant now and ripens in the future as pleasure, dispels with its shining and beaming and radiance any other doctrines whatsoever of ordinary recluses and Brahmins. This is what the Blessed One said. So it's kind of a bit weird, I think. It's a very beautiful simile, but then why, since he's taught doing the 10 ways of wholesome action for getting reborn in heaven, why does that dispel the doctrines of other recluses and Brahmins, since there are plenty of other religions that also teach doing good deeds to get reborn in heaven? The Chinese do not have such a statement. It's not in the Chinese. Still, it's a very beautiful simile. Just do that. Doesn't seem to me to be quite apt in there.
Not very Dhamma-ish, that last bit.
No.
Maybe it's been tacked on. Is that to agree with the beginning or with the previous sutta?
I don't know, it seems to sort of appear there. Not in the Chinese, not in any of the Chinese versions. Maybe it's a textual civil follow.
I have read suttas where the Buddha talks of how to get this is two Brahman news, how to merge with, or to, in the Digha Nikaya, how to merge with Brahma, or seek union with Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't go any further than stating how to purvey all four quarters with loving kindness.
Yeah.
And that's how they can get to Brahma.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything after that, it just stops.
Yes, it is.
And then he reams out, Sariputta for talking old sick mate who's just about to die.
Yeah.
For not giving him the
old sick mate, otherwise known as Dhananjani.
Dhananjani, could be him. Could be. For not teaching further than doing the same thing, exactly the same thing.
So what's going on?
It's dodgy.
It's dodgy, is it?
Dodgy.
Dodgy Brothers Suttas.
Yeah.
Just call us. We'll knock together a sutta for you. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Brahma realm. We got Brahma realm.
Yeah. Loving kindness and all, we've got that.
I mean, normally that would be understood in terms of the Buddha's teaching according to the different capacities of people. So in certain cases, maybe all we're ready to hear is talk about the Brahma realm. Other cases, they may be ready for deeper dhammas as well.
Usually so, he would gladden them. He will go through the gradual training side of things and he will gladden them and try to get them to that state.
Usually, but not, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work all the time.
And the only difference with the Sariputta episode was that guy was ready for something a bit more, apparently.
Yeah.
But Sariputta didn't know that.
Right.
Or he didn't seek to know, or didn't investigate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe he was rebuking him for not investigating further.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. Any more questions?
Papi Pannu Bhagavan.